Hey everybody. I hope you're well today. Welcome to this new program. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Carrie. Let me first start by just taking a moment to really dedicate this time to the pursuit of truth and take the time here to just really turn this over to inner wisdom. Yeah, I'm going to start off with, I don't know, a few confessions, some disclaimers. I got to tell you that today I am feeling slightly out of sorts, which perhaps makes this the perfect time to start a new program. I've been listening to this book, Wake Up and Roar, Sat Song with Papaji, for several months on an Audible book. And I am enamored with the material contained in this book. And felt led to do this program based on this book. I can tell you that teaching this book will be a stretch for me. My doubt thoughts, my confused mind would tell me that there are other people who are perhaps better suited to teaching this book, who are more familiar with the teachings, who are more intimate with the teachings of Papaji. I'm reading Cheryl's comments. The burn will only hurt a little at first. So I'm going to work through this, and ego or confused mind would make this an effort, and what I really want to do is let go the effort. What I really want to do is let go the confused mind, the false self, Jacqueline. And allow grace to teach through me. What I want to be clear about is that I do want to be authentic, and I do promise to you that I will be honest. I'll be honest in my understanding. I'll be honest in my failure to understand or my misunderstanding. Regina types, yay. So if that's not enough of an introduction, anyway, I so we're just going to go through this book together, and I'm going to begin by reading, and I don't know how much reading there will be here and how much teaching. That's not for me to decide, but I do want to read from the forewords to these books. This is again, it's Wake Up and Roar, Sat Song with Papaji. and it's by Eli Jackson Bear. And you guys may be aware that Eli Jackson Bear is the husband of Papaji, who of course was a student of Papaji. And there are forewords by both Gangaji and Prince EA. Now, if you're able to pronounce his second name, EA, I'm not aware of it. Prince EA, you guys may have seen him on Facebook or YouTube. He is a young African-American fellow, and I only denote his race because we don't see a lot of young African-American fellows, or I haven't seen a lot of young African-American fellows involved in these teachings. So it's quite refreshing. I also mention it because he, I often see his posts on friends pages, friends who don't be on the spiritual path but recognize the truth of what is being taught by Prince EA. And so he's very hip, very urban, again, quite refreshing. And if I didn't say, he is the student of Gangaji and Eli Jackson Bear. And on the Audible version of this book, he takes the role of the questioner. And again, these are recorded or transcribed sessions, satsangs with Papaji. And again, he on the audio version of this, he asks the questions. So, anyhow. So I want to start with the forewords. I think it tells us about the people involved in the making of this book, as well as tells us more about Papaji. So I'll just start with the foreword. The first is the foreword from Prince EA. If anybody knows if you can pronounce that name, you let me know, because I'm not aware of the pronunciation. Okay, here goes. I did not have the opportunity to come into physical contact with Papaji's form. Well, not that I'm aware of. My first experience with him came digitally, watching his YouTube videos at 3 a.m., a time of little distraction. I composed this foreword, ironically, around the same hour. I stumbled upon his satsangs after coming into contact with the work of his beloved students, Eli Jackson Bear, Gangaji, and Muji. But who was their teacher? I had to know. I soon found out his name was Papaji. I soon became enthralled by Papaji's wisdom. For me, Papaji wasn't giving me something new to believe in, or knowledge to add to my already overflowing repository in order to satisfy my spiritual or intellectual ego. No, he was simply inviting me to find the truth. This directly appealed to my scientific mind. Question everything. But Papaji goes deeper. We must question even the questioner. Do not take or cling to any concept or assumption. Start from zero. From where does all arise from? Behind the retina and before the breath, you need not see this, you are it, Papaji said. Papaji's transmission of emptiness, silence, truth, and love has pierced through to the depths of my heart and led me home. Keep quiet, he would say. Keep quiet. How simple. He was so direct in his teaching, actually his non-teaching, his non-doing. In order to realize the greatest question of all, who am I? The question that answers all questions. The highest calling for mankind. Yet every human being's natural birthright, self-realization. Papaji is one of the many great sages dedicated his life to inviting others to realize the truth. He uniquely expressed this truth through the skillful means of humor, gentleness, presence, and a smile that emanated pure love. One glance at Papaji's smile, and you can see that this is a man who lived in reality and walked hand in hand with God. Papaji isn't giving us a new set of beliefs, concepts, or practices. Drop them all, he says. No search, no seeker, just stop. The realization of truth is closer than close. No distance. A journey not from here to there, but from here to here. What I find beautiful about Papaji's transmission, which comes from the Ramana Maharshi lineage, is its directness. No more postponements, no more delays. Simply drop all of your practices and you can attain realization and freedom today, here and now. Wait, pardon me, you mean I don't have to do yoga or meditate for 50 years before I get enlightened? What a revolutionary and counterintuitive premise. All of our lives we have worked to attain things. Things that have never truly fulfilled us. Could it be that through no effort we find supreme and eternal freedom? Could it be that once we let go of believing who we think we are, we become free to actually be who we are? Could it be that we are already free? Find out for yourself. Papaji's words, like all other gurus, are signposts, mere pointings. It is up to you to come into direct experience with the truth. It is up to you to wake up and roar. The fact that you have found this book, or it has somehow found you, means that you are being led by grace. I urge you to go all the way with an open mind and an open heart. And that's signed Prince E.A., St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah, and a couple of things jumped out at me as I read that forward. And point out, I think, the direction that my path, if you want to call it that, seems to be taking, as well as the difficulty that I was talking about earlier. So let me find that. he talks about, there in the first part, he talks about Papaji saying, question everything. He says, but Papaji goes deeper. We must question even the questioner. Do not take or cling to any concept or assumption. Start from zero. From where does all arise from? He talks about no more postponements, no more delays. Simply drop all of your practices. And you can attain realization and freedom today, here and now. And I think that could be easily confused. You know, you say no practice, and it sounds like, okay, good deal. I can close the book. I can quit, you know, I can quit coming in here and quote unquote teaching. I can quit meditating, but I really do not think that this is what's being said by Papaji. Or Gangaji or Muji, the admonishment to stop, and Gangaji will talk a little bit about more about that in her foreword to the book. The admonishment to stop is really, I think, the same thing that Regina's been teaching in gentle healing. I think it's about, you know, stop adding to, Prince E.A. talked about the stop adding to the repository. You know, it's stop adding to this storehouse of accumulated knowledge. It's about having a direct experience of the truth. And I know that Gangaji, I've heard Gangaji talk about, and I don't know whether I'm watching the same video with Gangaji where she talks about her several different videos. But she talks about when Papaji told her to stop, she's like, okay, how do I do that, right? How do I stop? Because this is what in my personal experience, I don't know how to address that either. Okay, how do I stop? You know, this is what the confused mind wants to master a technique, wants to gain some insight, wants to somehow become a better whatever being, a better something that that then this improved me will have access to the truth as it's being taught by the masters. It's like we want to to gain something, that if I just learn this one more thing, that if I just master this technique, then I will have discovered the portal to awakening or enlightenment. Or, you know, I will discover how to become me. And I think the truth of this is that I cannot become me. I think the truth of this is probably I think the truth of this is probably that I unbecome those things that keep me from seeing the truth of who I am. And you can see that even in talking about it, I elongate this. I make it into a process. And I think what Papaji is going to be teaching us is that there's no process. That the truth of my being is here, is now, is accessible, and that there's nothing that I need to do to become that. That there's really no magic formula to access that. And I see myself going, okay, so let's find out how, right? Which is, you know, it can be a failure of the language, but I think, we watched a movie a while back for Movie Watchers Group. I think it was called The Arrival, where we saw how language kind of drives how we process information. Language drives everything we do because we think, the thinking mind thinks in language. So I don't think it's a process. But what it is, I don't know, and we'll go forward together and and look at this and see where our direct experience takes us. Okay, so we're gonna look at Gangaji's forward. Wow, we are way into this hour. But I'll begin this forward. I think this next one is from Gangaji. Yeah, so I'll begin reading this and see where we get. I first knocked on Papaji's door in Hardwar, India, in 1990. Opening the door himself, he greeted us with a huge smile and flashing eyes. He opened his arms uninhibitedly, and nearly shouting, he cried out, "Welcome!" Over the days and weeks to come, I watched him offer this same welcome to whoever appeared at his door for satsang. Typically, we would spend days sitting quietly with him in his room on the banks of the Ganga. Sometimes a visitor would ask a question regarding the search for truth. Always, Papaji would cut to the heart of the question, and always in a way the questioner could most likely understand. With Buddhists, he would use the life or teachings of the Buddha to direct the questioner into a fresh, unique way of self-discovery. With Sufis, he might quote Kabir. With those of no religion or spiritual practice, he would speak unencumbered by religion or practice. He enjoyed going over a visitor's travel plans or the train schedule for various points in India. No particular formula was needed to receive the direct transmission of truth that his presence freely offered to all. This, for me, created an atmosphere of relaxation, a letting go in my own mind of any concepts of what I should be learning, how I should be acting, or what my experience should be. Occasionally, he would go around the room asking for reports of what had been realized. It was often at this point, through Papaji's confirmation and confidence in the questioner's realization, that one or more people in the room would internally catch fire with the all-inclusive expansiveness of consciousness consciously aware of itself. What tears and laughter of pure joy! How contagious it was! One person's awakening was everyone's awakening, whether that awakening lasted a minute or a lifetime. What was directly experienced was one self. Sometimes, after being in this precious room together, we would have tea or go for a walk or visit the local market for vegetables and trinkets. On one such outing, I began to long for the atmosphere of his room, where grace and love were so obvious. Just as I began to follow my thoughts into sentimentality, he caught my eye and his glance stopped me. What I received from that glance was the certain understanding that here, wherever one might be, is the same grace and love as in any holy meeting, on any mountaintop, or in any cave. Nothing can take it away, as everything exists only by that grace. Shortly after Papaji's death on September 6, 1997, I received a phone call from one of the students who was with him until the end. This is what was reported. In Papaji's last days, he fell ill with what was thought to be bronchitis. At a certain point, he was taken to the hospital and put on a respirator. Yet after a short time, his heart also began to fail. One of Papaji's closest students tried to question him as to what the procedure should be. Should they continue allowing the doctors to work at life support, or should they stop? Instead of answering the question, Papaji somehow rallied out of a semi-conscious state and to the three people in the room gave his last teaching, literally only hours before his body was finished. He looked at one student and strongly, intensely, and fiercely asked, "Where is the Buddha?" The student was deeply struck by the question and instantly understood. Papaji saw this, and so he looked to the next and said, "Where is the Buddha?" At first she replied, "You are the Buddha, Papaji." Again he demanded, "Where is the Buddha?" Another person brought him a picture of Ramana and said, "Papaji, here is the Buddha." With the same intensity, Papaji directed his question to each person in the room. "Where is the Buddha?" He was heavily sedated, and again he slipped into a semi-conscious state. His students were still very concerned as to what Papaji's wishes were for his body. Again, they asked him, "Papaji, these doctors have many procedures that they can use to keep your body alive, but we have to know what it is you want." By some miracle of life force, in his severely weakened state, Papaji put his arm around a student, grabbed his hand, and squeezing it very tightly said, "Boss." "Boss" in Hindi means enough. Again, Papaji said, "Boss." The students felt the deep satisfaction of knowing what Papaji wanted, and they all agreed among themselves. But the doctors had their own regulations and so continued to try to keep his body alive. Papaji's heart stopped several more times, and each time the doctors brought him back. Finally, in much distress, his students urgently asked one another what could be done, how they might be able to intervene. One of them finally said, "Don't worry, Papaji will figure something out." Shortly thereafter, a blockage developed in the intravenous line delivering Papaji's heart medicine, and the heart rhythm shifted radically. The doctors finally admitted that they could do nothing more, and Papaji's body was finished. Boss. Okay. I guess that's a perfect place to stop because we're out of time. I will pick up here next week. I appreciate your presence and your allowing me to be here with you. I love you all, and see you next time. Bye. Okay, well, we're back. That's great. Oh, shoot. Yeah, I was. Well, that's what I couldn't figure out, right? I'm like, wow, that time went fast. Oh, this is great. I see that Regina. So I'll keep on going for an hour, for another half an hour. I got it now. I see Regina wrote, thank you, Carrie. I see Regina wrote me, wrote a comment when we were looking at, Papaji saying to his, students, who is the, Regina wrote, "It reminds me of Jesus asking the disciples, who do people say I am?" All right, so let's pick up where we left off, shall we? Okay, so I'll read that last sentence where we were. The doctors finally admitted that they could do nothing more, and Papaji's body was finished. Boss. Those closest to Papaji reported that to be in his presence those last days was to be in the presence of pure peace and bliss. There was absolutely no suffering. As is the Indian tradition, Papaji's body was burned in one of the burning ghats where he resided in the city of Lucknow. A few days later, his ashes were offered to his beloved river Ganga in Hardwar. Papaji's last teaching was also his first teaching. The root of his teaching, throughout all of his time with us, revolved around this type of inquiry. Where is Buddha? Where is awakened mind? You can substitute words such as peace, God, or truth. Where is peace? Where is truth? Where is God? Finally, where is life itself? Where is life to be found? Yeah, and as Regina noted, that's the same question that Jesus asked his disciples. Who do people say I am? Where do we look for truth, for God, for ourselves, for life? To receive the answer to these questions, We must first ruthlessly tell the truth about what has been found in those places where we have habitually looked. Only then can we inquire of ourselves deeply, honestly, and ruthlessly, where am I? Who am I? I was profoundly sad at the loss of Papaji's form, yet I remain exquisitely joyful in the realization that what Papaji is can never be lost. It cannot shift with the dissolution of form. How is it possible that both gone and here are included? Because Papaji is life, and everything is included in life. What Papaji's form always relentlessly pointed to was that which was here before he was born, that which remains after he is gone, and that who he is, unborn and not subject to death, is never separate from who you are or from anything at all. And I want to say, my husband Tom, has been reading I Am That. I have spent some time with that book. I know Regina's spent a great deal of time with that book. The reason I mentioned Tom is because he mentioned this to me recently, that there is a passage in I Am That by Nisargadatta Maharaj that talks about I am that which was here when you were born, and I am that which will be here when you die. I want to say also that in grouping the questions that Gangaji was asking, where is Buddha? Where is awakened? Where is truth? Where is God? Finally, where is life itself? Where is life to be found? That in grouping those together with the question that Jesus asked, who do people say I am? That I feel that those are the same questions and point to the same truth, the same point that Gangaji is making here, that Papaji is life, and that everything is included in that life. I feel that all those questions are pointing to that same answer. But I must say that I don't recall what the answer was. I know this to Jesus' question, who do people say I am? I don't recall how that was answered. I recall that a couple of disciples said something that was not the correct answer. And that one of the disciples came up with that answer. Regina, do you want to type on the board and tell us what was said, or would you like to take the mic and tell us what was said? When Jesus asked that question? Okay, I'll let go of the mic.
Yeah, thank you. It would just take too long for me to type it. You know, people answered Elijah. I don't remember who else they answered, but they answered people from their belief system. Because, you know, like the Jewish people expect Elijah to return. Because remember, he was raised up to heaven without ever dying. In fact, I think on the Sabbath, people who really practice faithfully the Jewish religion, they have an empty chair to represent Elijah. so, you know, they answered different different names like that from their belief system. And then Peter said, you are the Christ. And of course, the Christ, as you know, represents what we all are. And when Peter said, you are the Christ, that's when Jesus said to Peter, that I will call you the rock, and I will build my church on you, which really means that he was building his church on this inkling of knowledge that was beginning to arise, which would be completely new for the disciples, this inkling of knowledge that was beginning to rise about the Christ. So, yeah, that's it. I'm letting go.
Thank you, Regina. Yeah, for sharing that. Yeah, and I think that there's a little question this is the same thing that was being taught by Papaji. It's the same point that Gangaji is making here. Again, she says, how is it possible that both gone and here are included? Because Papaji is life, and everything is included in life. What Papaji's form always relentlessly pointed to was that which was here before he was born, that which remains after he is gone, and that who he is, unborn and not subject to death, is never separate from who you are or from anything at all. The ruthless message of Papaji's life and Papaji's death is to face the inevitable ending of all form, including one's loved ones and oneself. His message is the invitation to discover for oneself, without a doubt, that the truth of who one is formless presence of being. More than the body or the personality, more than thoughts or emotions, more than personal history. The invitation is to discover yourself as the living truth of consciousness itself. I'm going to read that again, and as I mentioned earlier, I mean, I think that's the same invitation that is being extended by Regina and Gentle Healing. It's the same invitation that is being extended by all of those masters who are teaching the truth. The invitation is to discover yourself again through direct experience. The invitation is to discover yourself as the living truth of consciousness itself. Gangaji continues. Someone once asked me what my life was like before I met Papaji, and I said, before Papaji, I didn't have a life. I had a story of suffering. But in the meeting of Papaji, I have only life. I am only life. In meeting this huge force that has the potential to stop the suffering of one's life, there is a recognition of what is alive, the living truth. Not abstractly, not theoretically, not in some hypothetical past or future, but the living truth as it always exists, alive and present in the core of all being. He taught until his last breath, and always his teaching was pointing us within to what is closer than any idea of inside or outside ourselves. Papaji's direct teaching was always to see the seer. When this is seen, then Wherever you are, you will continue the gift that is Papaji. If you feel a connection to Papaji from having either met him or heard about him or read about him or even from seeing a picture of him, I encourage you to open your mind as you read this book so that you can recognize what is already alive and present in the core of your own being. This profound message from this profound master that somehow attracts you is yours already if you will have it. Papaji's body is gone, but his teaching is alive within each of us. If his teaching pierces your heart open, it will relentlessly reveal your true identity to be life itself. And it's signed Gangaji, Ashland, Oregon. And I notice this last phrase is something I spent some time with last night in Growing with NTI and reading from Romans. It talked also about, let me see if I can pull that down, also about this heart opening. this is from NTI Romans chapter 12, verses 17 through 21. It says, to love your brother is to love your truth. To care for him is to open your heart to the whole. And when the heart is open, wholeness is welcomed in. And in its welcoming, its truth is remembered. I'm tickled to see the same phrase here. If his teaching pierces your heart open, it will relentlessly reveal your true identity to be life itself. And as I discussed last night in a recent, I don't know what you call it, awakening experience, realization, direct experience, I think maybe the best way to discuss it, I had the experience of a heart opening. And I could see the contrast with what I normally do, that I normally, am drawing boundaries and distinctions and placing barricades across the heart, protecting the heart, protecting the heart in the name of protecting and building this persona. Yeah, which is actually a seemingly a barrier to knowing this truth of my identity as life itself. All right. There's another foreword here, and this is by the author of the book, Eli Jackson Bear. So, before I go to that forward, I want to look at this idea again about this idea, if you will, about this heart opening and the contrast with what we normally do. I think this is this recognition that I seem to have had about the contrast between the direct experience of the truth of who I am and what I normally do in terms of, and I suspect what we all normally do, in terms of identifying with something, you know, identifying myself as something. You know, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a teacher, I'm a judge, I'm, you know, I'm sloppy, I'm punctual. Well, actually, I'm not punctual, right? Or I'm a good worker, or all of these things is what blocks my experience of myself as life itself, and what blocks my conjoined experience with everyone else, you know, the fullness, the wholeness of what actually is. I think that I'm seeing that teaching now show up. I think that I have the potential, again, words are funny, but to embrace the truth of no longer, and it's funny because the sentence seems to contradict itself, but to no longer claim some kind of knowledge, to no longer claim some kind of growth. And I can't even say the sentence because it circles back in on itself. But, you know, I think, now I may tell you the exact opposite next week, but what I think I see is that there is the nature of the confused mind, and this is where I started today's teaching. The nature of the confused mind is to, again, to accumulate, to learn something, to realize something, maybe is a better way of saying that, and then to immediately co-opt that, to immediately grasp that now as something that can be added to my store of, not only to my store of knowledge, but that can be added to my sense of who I am. You know, when I had that experience at that enlightenment intensive, that experience of, oh my gosh, this is who I am, and I can see what it is that I normally do. Then we were sent out on a contemplative walk to look at, you know, what we'd been experiencing. And I could very clearly see the thought, oh man, you got it now. Oh, you did great. Look how well you're doing, right? This attempt to simultaneously co-opt and undermine the teaching or the realization. So I think what I'm seeing now as a general direction is indeed this willingness to let go of, sorry guys, I'm trying to get it together here, but this willingness to let go of the identity as a spiritual seeker, the identity as a spiritual student, the identity of someone who has some knowledge or who has attained a certain level on the path. And I don't know how that's done. I don't know how to stop. But I can see that that's where the teachings are pointing. Okay. All right, so let's look at Eli Jackson Bear's foreword to this book, shall we? He writes, on January 19th, 1990, with an address written down from a phone book, I walked through the back streets of the Nari Market, an old neighborhood of Lucknow, India. After being guided by several helpful neighbors, I was shown to a small door in a row of attached houses. I knocked on the door. A man answered and with a big smile said, "Yes, he is upstairs. He is waiting for you." This blew my mind as I had not announced my coming. I went up the stairs of a tiny courtyard and into a small bedroom. He was sitting on his bed. "Come in, come in," he greeted me. The room was big enough for his bed and a chair. He asked me to sit on the bed with him. "Why did you come?" he asked. "I am really ready to wake up," I said. He laughed and laughed, and we embraced. In that moment, there was no question. I had met my master. I knew without a trace of doubt that I was looking at my own self. As he looked at me, I could say nothing at all. In that moment, my mind stopped, and all my knowing disappeared. I had met my match. He then read to me from the, and this, Xinjin Ming, maybe, H-S-I-N-H-S-I-N-M-I-N-G. He read to me from the Xinjin Ming, a classic non-dual transmission of Zen. "Confirmation. I am home. All is finished." My mind stopped on a deeper level, and I fell into vast, silent bliss. I spent the next 4 or 5 days alone with Sri Punjaji. I asked if I could call him Baba. He laughed and said he didn't mind. Then I noticed that his grandchildren called him Papaji, and soon I did also. Each day was a timeless eternity of bliss. After 2 days, I gave him my passport, tickets, and money. I told him I no longer cared about enlightenment. I only wanted to sleep outside his door and care for him. He laughed and playfully slapped me. We went on daily walks together. He would take me to see the local sights and taste the local food. We ate our lunch and dinner together, prepared by his grandchildren, and then went up to his room where he read and answered his mail. One evening it dawned on me what I was to give up. Not just this life or this world, but the entire universe. "None of it ever existed," he said with a smile. "Papaji," I said, "although I have known that this life was a dream, I took bodhisattva vows. I promised to come back." "Oh my God," he said, with a mock horror on his face. "It is a good thing I found you, or you would have brought me back with you." Eventually, he said that others were waiting to come and see him. "You sit and watch," he said. And what I saw was a miracle. I watched people come in and in the space of weeks get enlightened and leave. I had a thought he was a Zen master. Yet when a Bhakta of Anandamaya Ma came, he spoke as a Hindu. He spoke to the Vipassana practitioners of the teachings of Buddha. He spoke to the Christians of the inner meaning of the teachings of Jesus. When someone mentioned Sufis, he told stories of Kabir. His speaking was no different than the depth of sight radiated from him. When I asked him about cutting the mind, he told me to just be quiet. I did, and the mind stopped. What a miracle! I had never been with a spiritual teacher who had even allowed the possibility of the mind stopping. Here was a master by whose grace the mind effortlessly stopped for dozens of people. After the meetings, I would sit with Papaji and his son Surendra, and we would discuss the day's satsang and how people were progressing. I asked permission to write this book and read early passages to him, which he enjoyed and encouraged. I watched a constant flow of people from all over the world pass through Papaji's living room. Now the satsangs had grown too large for his bedroom, and 6 to 10 of us managed to fit in the small living room. I watched people to learn to effortlessly drop the mind and the idea of a personal ego, and thereby discover what has always been true and present. One by one, people identified themselves as emptiness, silence, love. Papaji would take a daily walk and satsang would happen while strolling in the street or sitting under a tree. He would take us into the middle of the marketplace to discover that inner silence and darshan need nothing externally. For those with eyes to see, here was the rarest event in this world, the opportunity to spend time in the presence of a saint, a true Buddha, who was speaking pure truth and passing on the flame of enlightenment and freedom to all who entered his door. Okay, there's a few more paragraphs of that, but I'm going to honor the time here and the next speaker. And once again, say thank you. I love you all, and I'll see you next time.